I think at wide receiver, DK Metcalf would be a great fit to give Josh Allen a true number one guy. And I don't think at this point anybody should be married to any one course or say that it would be a mistake, just because the Bills do have so many needs. And so it's probably about prioritizing them and then seeing what ultimately happens in free agency.
When you talk to people and you look back and you see a DK Metcalf from Ole Miss, whose father was drafted in the third round, Terrence out of Ole Miss, an offensive guard. His grandfather, Terry Metcalf, we all remember, with the St. Louis Cardinals, great running back. You think about his uncle, Eric Metcalf, the job he did at Texas, so great bloodlines there, Michael, and the fact that he's a big 6'3", 6'4", 235-pounder. He's got gifts that only a rare number of receivers have had over the last 25 years. That could allow him to maybe be a ninth pick overall to the Buffalo Bills. There's certainly somebody looking for a talented wideout in the top 15 of the draft.
Oh my God, I don't ever play that soundbite again.
Why?
That's awful.
What?
I saw this guy's grandfather play. That's terrible.
That's only, what, like 40 years?
Look, I'm up with, okay, hey, I remember, hey, that kid, oh, wow, I saw, like, Vlad Guerrero Jr. Hey, saw your dad play, cool. This is the first time I've ever thought of it. Oh my God, I saw his grandfather play.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, listen, Lord, that's depressing.
On Friday, Brayton, in the suite, we were discussing, Howard and I, that because we went to the Sabres game with Batavia Downs, Ryan Hasenauer. Mm-hmm. And we were discussing how very soon I will be the age that he was when we started the show together.
Mm-hmm.
That's terrifying for me.
That's a, oh my God, I'm old moment for you. Yeah, right.
How old were you when we started?
2004, so I would have been 40, I got to do math. Sorry, 42. 42, yeah.
42.
I just turned 42 in June that year.
2.5 years, I'll be there. That's terrifying.
That's great, man. It's all downhill from here. I'm sorry, that doesn't trump I saw your grandfather play. That's the first time I've ever, I think. Anyway, Terry Metcalf, who Mel Kiper Jr. was talking about, played with the St. Louis Cardinals for one. You might have remembered him with the Cardiac Kids, I think. The Cardinals teams of the 70s, I want to say like Jim Hart maybe was their quarterback. They were still in St. Louis. And Terry Metcalf was an exciting running back. His grandkid, I didn't even know that was his grandkid, DK Metcalf, the wide receiver. We want to talk about that in a second, but that's got to tell you, that's really depressing. Sabres are playing Florida tonight. It is a 7 o'clock game. We'll have it here on WGR beginning at 6 with the pregame show. And Phil Housley scheduled to join us at the bottom of the hour or thereabouts. Kyle Aposo has returned to Buffalo. Marco Scandella is now week to week. Bogosian Ristolainen did not practice yesterday. Phil Housley called it a maintenance day, said they'll know more today about those guys. Casey Nelson did practice. Paul's got the complete rundown at WGR550.com. The franchise tag period opens in the NFL today.
So who are the Bills franchising today?
I got to tell you, nobody. It's funny. I saw Mike Florio had a piece at ProFootballTalk.com, and I thought, all right, maybe he did a piece of, you know, like for a franchise tag option for every team in the league. Now, I'm going to guess it's just he had to come up with somebody for every team, so you just might as well throw a name out there. The guy he had for the Bills was Jordan Phillips. And I thought, what are you talking about? And now,
you may remember Jordan Phillips from, hey, that guy looks like he's having fun out there.
Yeah, yeah. That was at the Tennessee game.
That was
the
him
home
this
games.
Year. Like, he also got a penalty.
He got the penalty in Miami
for
taunting the bench, which was a really big penalty at that moment.
Didn't they win that? No, they lost,
no, they
that,
lost
game.
That game.
That's right.
Jordan Phillips. And I saw some other website today suggested the Bills, are you high? A franchise tag of Jordan Phillips cost the Bills a projected $15.5 million. Now, they have cap space. But if they franchise tag Jordan Phillips to pay him $15 million for 1 year, I think I might demand resignations the next morning. No, I wouldn't franchise tag anybody. The remaining Bills free agents are Ryan Groy, Jordan Mills, Jordan Phillips. Is Tywan Jones re-signed? Logan Thomas, Deontay Thompson, John Miller, Eddie Yarborough. It's funny, Vontae Davis is still listed at SpotTrack as a Bills free agent. So I would not be using the franchise tag on anybody. And, you know, I'm all for signing Jordan Phillips, but tag him for $15 million? Why? There's no way I would do that. So I don't anticipate anybody being tagged by the Bills today. Dallas has declined the option on wide receiver Terrence Williams. So it will be a free agent next month. So will, same story, I should say, for tight end Austin Seferian Jenkins, who had a disappointing injury-shortened season with the Jags last year. He will be a free agent. And UB stays at 25th in the new AP Top 25 poll. The Bulls are in action tonight at home. First of three straight at home. They'll take on the Ohio Bobcats at 7 o'clock. And you can hear that game on ESPN 1520. Very few tickets left. They're looking at the possibility of having sellouts, standing room only crowds, for all four of their remaining home games, which is has been the norm the last few home games over at Alumni Arena. 803-0550 to join us. 888-550-2550. All right. Should I get myself excited about the possibility of the Bills taking a wide receiver at number 9? Mel Kiper's new mock draft. You heard from him. DK Metcalf, wide receiver. Joe Marino talked about him yesterday with Chopin the Bulldog. Big physical wide receiver who can get separation, who can get downfield. Marino yesterday with Chopin the Bulldog said, quote, "He looked like a superhero. You don't necessarily want that much upper body bulk on a receiver. Reality is he's at one of the best facilities in the world for life in the NFL. There's no way they're training him poorly there. But this guy's got a big body, 6'4", to what? I think 215, 220, and I might be underselling him a little bit. I think there's a less than 10% chance the Bills take a wide receiver with their first pick in the draft. How much should I start thinking about that? I don't want to get myself excited about the idea of getting a playmaker with the 9th pick because I just don't think they're going to do it. I just think Joe Marino also said he thinks the Bills would not take wide receiver at 9. They'd go offensive line, and I tend to agree with him.
Or tight end. Hockenson.
Yeah, if you traded down. Is that one of the? I guess you could trade down. Yeah, because isn't that one of those cardinal rules? You don't take a tight end in the top 10 in the draft?
I don't think so.
Okay. I don't think they're doing that either. I just think they're going to go with a guy.
What cardinal rules are there left in the draft? It used to be you don't take
safeties,
a safety,
right.
And now safeties are very important.
Right. Not top 10 anyway.
And why are safeties very important? Because tight ends have kind of...
Well, they fill such a big role now.
Yep.
They're not just the last line of defense on the field. They could be down in the box. They're asked to cover. They can blitz. They can do a whole bunch of different things.
So that cardinal rule is out the window. For a very, very brief period, we had no running backs in the first round.
Right, because you could always find a running back anywhere.
Now they're back.
Yeah.
And they've been being, top 10 or first round. You don't take a guard that high? Is that all that's left?
I would say Quentin
Nelson just went
last year
sixth
to Indy
and was a big part of what helped that offensive line turn things around. All right, so, honestly, I'm trying to think if there's a real cardinal rule of the draft. You don't do this.
You don't draft a quarterback and play him right away.
No, but you do that all the
changed.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even in the first round, you rarely get a guy. You would like, oh, you draft him, you got him, let him sit and develop. Forget it. Now you draft the guy and he plays.
Yeah.
Look at all the guys that played this year from the first round.
So I don't know. There are there are no rules. Yeah. It's no holds barred now at the draft. You do whatever you want.
There still is one cardinal rule. You forgot the obvious cardinal rule of the draft. You always take the best player available.
That's,
you never draft
yes,
for
right.
need.
That's right.
I just don't. I would not see them taking a tight end either. I'd still be excited. I got to be honest with you. I'd be far more excited about a wide receiver with the first pick in the draft because I would hope this guy comes in and has an impact. But I just don't see them doing that. And I hear Mel Kiper talk glowingly about DK Metcalf and why it would be a good fit. I understand why it would be a good fit. I feel like it'd be a mistake for me to get my hopes up about a wide receiver because if they're on the clock and they call the name of an offensive lineman, sure, it makes perfect sense, but it's not exactly going to fire you up.
No. Probably not.
It's the tackle I've always wanted.
Joe Marino.
But it makes sense.
Yesterday with Mike Chopin the Bulldog made a point. This is something we've talked about with Sal, about what the Bills want to do. Allen is not going to be, probably ever, a quick-throwing, very accurate,
right.
surgically precise.
He's not the old West Coast offense guy.
No, probably not. It's probably going to be deeper drops, mm-hmm. deeper depth of target. Guys that get open down the field a little better, more necessarily than guys that get open right away. Mm-hmm. You're going to want your tackles to be, I don't even know if that's a thing, getting open down the field versus right away. I need some next-gen stats on that. But I think you know what I mean. You're going to want more vertical receivers than you are slot guys. And you're going to want tackles that are better in pass protection. If they've got to choose between pass protection and run protection, I'm going to want them to be guys that are really good that can hold longer, build deeper pockets, because I think Josh Allen's going to be that kind of quarterback that it's about deeper pockets. So I mean, if that's what they are, and that's why they go for certain linemen, because Spencer Long just said something. I saw a quote for him that they value. It seems like they're valuing. Let me find. I make sure I got it right, because I thought it said. I saw a quote from Long saying they're placing more of an emphasis on pass blocking than run blocking.
Okay.
But I got to make sure I have that right. If anyone else saw that and can send that to me, I didn't save it in my favorites. I should have done that.
That's funny, considering how bad the run blocking was last year. Like, I didn't. You know, I didn't have as big an issue with the pass blocking, pass protection, as I think we did with the run blocking. It mm-hmm. feels like they didn't have guys who could open up holes. They didn't have guards who could pull effectively and lead block on a play. And I would have thought that they would be looking to improve their run blocking this
offseason. I mean, I could have it backwards.
I didn't see it. Yeah, I don't.
Let me see if I can find that. There's also one other scenario, which the Patriots apparently were kicking the tires and trying to trade for Odell Beckham Jr. which, by the way, I do find, on one level, delicious. Because the Patriots are, among other things, they win Super Bowls all the time. They also, I do believe that they troll the entire league. Because if they had traded for Odell Beckham Jr., somewhere, a column in New York would have been unearthed about how Belichick would never tolerate a guy like Odell Beckham Jr. You know? But it's just like when they signed Gilmore and it became... Mm-hmm. Just like it was very instantly obvious, like, wow, they never signed big money corners. They never signed big money anything, and they went for this. This is the kind of guy that Belichick would never handle, and yet he's after Odell Beckham Jr. So I wonder if they're just trolling the league, but good enough for the Patriots, huh?
Did you see the story about the Patriot way and how that affected the Beckham? I hope you didn't see it. Beckham, the trade, the near trade, the Chris Sims story?
No.
Great. Okay, you ready? This is the Patriot way. So Chris Sims, who's with, I think, NBC Sports these days, he said that last offseason, nobody knows exactly how close, nobody understands how close the Giants came to trading Odell Beckham Jr. Now, there had been speculation that the Rams were interested, that the Browns were interested, but Chris Sims says he found out over the course of the season from multiple sources that they came really close to trading him. But the Patriots had called and expressed an interest, like they really wanted to trade for Odell Beckham Jr. And the Giants, who were going to trade him, thought, well, if the Patriots think this guy's good enough for them, we shouldn't trade Odell Beckham Jr. So they pulled back and they decided not to trade him at that time when they were apparently on the verge of trading him. But because the Patriots were interested, they thought, well, the Patriots basically know a lot about football, right? And they think Odell Beckham is the guy they'd want to have on their roster. So you know what? If he's that good, maybe we should keep him. And the Giants decided not to trade Odell Beckham because the Patriots called and expressed interest. There you go, babe. Patriot way.
I'm going to be honest. I think that's legit.
Why would the Giants need the Patriots to call them? Why don't you just look at it and go, hey, this guy's really good.
I think,
and we are going to get a young quarterback in here at some point. You know what would be really good for a young quarterback? A franchise wide receiver. Why would you need the Patriots to convince you not to trade Odell Beckham Jr.? They're crazy.
I think it's legit.
As a Giants fan, I would wonder about the people running my organization.
Would you?
Yes. You shouldn't be trading one of the best players on the team at a time when you're about to get a young quarterback in there and redo your offense.
Are they about to get a young quarterback?
Well, if they don't, they're crazy.
Well, think of it this way. I like to point out the similarities between fantasy sports and regular sports because I think the similarities are real, and it's not that different. You know, when we were Mike Shope's Fantasy League, the League of Shopes and Dreams, as we're doing our drafts, Kevin Payne from RotoWire is in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And if I bid on a player... And then he bid on the player. I'd be like, ooh, this is a good one to bid on.
Have faith in your own opinion.
Why? I don't know what I'm doing.
So he's with RotoWire.
It's Dave Gettleman. If I'm a Giants fan, and Dave Gettleman's running my team, A, I'm nervous. But if every single move that Dave Gettleman makes, he asks himself, what would the Patriots do? I think that actually might be an upgrade.
Okay, but wait a minute. Okay, so one of the teams that was in on Odell Beckham Jr., supposedly, and they were close to making a trade, one of the teams was the Rams. Why wouldn't you pull back at that point? Hey, here's the Rams and Sean McVay, this hot young coach who came in and turned around. Now, granted, this is last offseason, okay? This is before the 2018 season. But, let's not trade Odell. If Sean McVay wants him and he knows what to do about offense, why should we trade Odell Beckham Jr.? Maybe you wouldn't be persuaded to do differently if the Browns called you, at the time. But... the Rams are one of the better offenses in the team, in the league, with a young coach who's supposed to know a lot about offense. Why don't you pull back at that point? First off, the idea of trading Odell Beckham Jr.
Well, they might do
nuts.
It.
Nuts. They might. Now there's talk that the 49ers are going to go hard after Odell Beckham Jr. And maybe as part of the package, they would offer the number 2 overall pick in the draft to the Giants.
For Beckham?
As part of a package, yes.
Wow. I mean, are the Niners going from, wow.
Yeah, let me.
That's a steep price. Because yeah. Antonio Brown, there's a report that his tweeting about the Steelers has scared off at least one team. Which is, all right, honest question, which is dumber? Being scared of trading Odell Beckham away because the Patriots were interested and you mm-hmm. think, like, uh-oh. Or crossing Antonio Brown off of your potential targets because he tweeted.
Well, you're setting me up. It's a rhetorical question.
No, it's an honest question. You might think that the Patriot thing is silly, but you might think that the Twitter...
I think the Patriot thing is really dumb.
Worse than the Twitter one?
The Twitter one should never be into the discussion.
Right. You knew...
You should never use that. When you're trying to figure out whether or not you're trading for Antonio Brown... I know it's 2019, and of course teams are going to take social media into account. I get it. Can the guy play? I mean, do we think he's going to come in and just blow up our organization? I get the concerns. I do. Is he going to do something on Facebook Live from the locker room after the
game?
And
not just that.
I understand
but
that.
But that's what's amazing about the Antonio Brown story is that you've already known who he was. Mm-hmm. And somehow it was these tweets where you're like, wow, we can't do that anymore. I was thinking about it. But now that I've seen Antonio Brown tweet about Roethlisberger and the owner, now mm-hmm. I've decided I can't do it anymore.
I don't like either one of those, quite honestly. But I understand people are going to take... I don't get the Odell Beckham thing. Honestly, I'm going to vote for that as being crazier. The guy's a fantastic receiver. He's talented. He's incredible. He's your franchise-wide receiver. If you were to trade Odell... Let's say the Giants traded Odell Beckham Jr. Hey, guess what now is... you can add to their offseason need.
Receiver.
Yeah.
They still have
Sterling Shepard? I'm trying to think of some of the guys
they
have there.
They actually have a pretty good receiver.
They don't have garbage behind him.
No, and they got a good tight end.
This guy
and a great
is
running back.
A franchise... Yes, Saquon Barkley is a very talented football player. I still would have taken a quarterback number 1 last year, but Saquon Barkley had a phenomenal season. Didn't do the Giants a hell of a lot of good, and you're still stuck with Eli Manning. I just don't get why, you know... Who would you look at? I'm trying to think how to phrase this for you. Who would you look at and say would be a bigger headache at this point? Tougher, quote, to manage. Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham Jr.? Would it be Antonio Brown? Doesn't he have more, quote-unquote, incidents?
Yes, I would say it's Antonio Brown.
So what are the Giants thinking? Like, you might understand the Steelers. Honestly, if things have gotten so bad with Brown and Roethlisberger, what are the Steelers thinking about doing with their quarterback? Extending his contract. So he's not going anywhere anytime soon. So maybe they just feel we cannot continue this with the quarterback and the receiver. We want Ben to stay, so let's move the receiver. What's the Giants? Is Odell constantly calling out Eli Manning?
And the Giants are probably a culture team, right? Dave Gettleman's about
culture. I would think he's old-school culture guy,
yeah,
sure.
He wants... Everybody rowing in the same direction, doesn't want the distraction. The Giants would be doing this because, I mean, there's no doubt he's talented.
Yeah.
He's one of the best receivers in football.
Well, I guess it gets, to the discussion of, I think at some point, culture is a wonderful thing. And you know what's even better? Top-notch talent.
With the Steelers, the guy actually didn't show up. Like that.
That's a bigger headache.
That's beyond culture. We can't count on him, which, sure, you can say that is some version of that. With Beckham... I mean, he's been great. He got into a scrap with Josh Norman. Mm-hmm. He had a couple of injuries, but other than that, he's been great. So I think
that's why I don't get the whole Giants thing with him.
I do think there's a difference. Chase writes in, if Odell ends up on the team, I'm going to be upset. On the Bills, I guess, is what he means. Hmm. I asked the question, I put up a Twitter poll, trying to find a way to ask two questions in one. Do you think the Bills would ever consider trading for Brown or Beckham? And would you want them to? So first part is, do you think they would consider it? Second part is, would you want it to happen? And I've got four answers. No and no. No and yes. Yes and yes. And yes and no.
Of course they should consider. They would consider it. If they don't, they're not doing their job. You have to have this discussion.
So you think that you wish they would.
Yes.
But you don't think they would.
No. I think they would have a discussion and at the end of the day, for a myriad of reasons, decide it's not in the best interest of the team to do it. Look, this you're telling me that the alternative is... Bean and McDermott, let's say it's just Bean and McDermott hanging out in the office one day. And Bean says to McDermott, hey, what about Antonio Brown? No way. And they move on to another topic. Like, they never have an in-depth discussion as an organization about Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham Jr. You should. It's your job. You have to. You should talk these things out with everybody in your organization. Ownership, the GM, the coach, the scouts, whoever. You should call. You know anybody who works for the Steelers? Call them and find out about Antonio Brown. You know anybody? Well, he does know somebody who works for the Giants. He could call Dave Gettleman, I guess, and find out about. You got to do all this exhaustive research. At the end of the day, I think as an organization, they wouldn't want to. A, give up a first-round pick.
Would they want to pay the money?
B, take on the contract. Because Antonio Brown, among the things I think he's been tweeting about was, well, I think he said something about it's not the about the money, but then I saw something today that he is looking for a new contract.
Okay.
So that's going to be huge money, and I don't think the Bills would want to do either of those things, well, let alone is he going to be okay in the room with young receivers and your point, Josh Allen, your young quarterback.
We'll have Phil Housley in about 10 minutes. On that question about Brown and Beckham. So, no, I don't think the Bills would consider it, but I wish they would, is in second place. No, I don't think they'd consider it, and no, I don't want them to, is just edging that out.
Wow.
And I think there are two reasons for that. We went over this a little bit last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago. The two reasons are...
Last week, with Josh Allen?
Yeah.
Yeah,
last week. Okay. Yeah. Two reasons. One, if you're a Bills fan and you know the Bills wouldn't consider doing it, you can easily get yourself to, I don't want them to because I want them to do what they want. The other part of it is, Allen, you know, are these two good ideas for any young quarterback that's still finding his way?
Mm-hmm.
Are they a good idea for Arizona? I saw that Arizona might be a favorite to land Antonio Brown.
Okay.
Maybe, maybe not. Is that a good idea for any young quarterback outside of maybe Baker Mayfield? Because Baker Mayfield will tweet at him, shut up.
Yeah.
You know, Baker Mayfield.
I feel like that, right. That might be a young quarterback who could handle just about right. anything.
Baker Mayfield recently got an online fight with Arian Foster. Did you see that one?
No.
Yeah, that's right. Arian Foster said something and Baker Mayfield told him to keep his mouth shut, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe he's the new kind of quarterback that can deal with diva receivers by telling them to be quiet.
Good for him.
Who knows? But that's a big part of it for me. I'm not so sure it's a good idea for a young quarterback that you're trying to bring along. If you bring in a receiver like that, it speeds up the timeline in two ways. One, he's obviously great. He needs the ball. And two, if he doesn't get it, it'll be week three where you have strife. So I realize that can lead to a bigger point about, well, maybe your quarterback's not up to it, no matter who that quarterback is. If it's Rosen or Lamar Jackson or Sam Darnold or Josh Allen, who cares? You speed up your own timeline there. Mm-hmm. And when you're doing the trust the process, he's learning, we're going to come together as an offense, you don't want anyone in there that's going to be the lightning rod, that's going to draw more. And I'm not saying I necessarily support it entirely, but I do think that there is a case to be made there for the young guys to keep these guys away from younger players. They're both coming from Eli and Roethlisberger.
Yeah, no, I know.
Guys that were wildly established before they showed up.
Now, you could also, you wouldn't say this about Eli, but you can, and I believe you brought this up last week as well, you can absolutely make the case with Roethlisberger that guy's been a pain in the butt.
For sure.
And is a diva.
For sure.
And complains and a whole bunch of stuff. Eli, no, I don't think anybody's ever said that about Eli Manning. So if you're looking for the whole Antonio Brown is Krypton, stay away from him, he's toxic. Well, the quarterback in Pittsburgh is a handful at times, and you got to manage his personality and his attitude too. 803-0550 to join us, 888-550-2550. We have Sabres hockey coming up tonight. Phil Housley's going to join us in the next segment. You have a chance for a really cool Sabres experience thanks to the folks over at Labatt Blue. How about watching a game in a suite with some former Sabres? March 17th against St. Louis, you could be in a suite watching the game with Danny Briere, JP Dumont, Andrew Peters, and Darren Puppa. You'll also get official Labatt Sabres swag signed by all four of the guys in the suite with you. All you need to do to register to win this prize is visit any of the 17 area consumers' beverages, Fat Bob's Smokehouse, or Jack Devine's Irish Pub. When you get there, look for the Labatt code word to win, and then take the code word, go to our website, and, well, register to win. WGR550.com. No purchase is necessary. You do have to be 21 years of age or older to enter.
Darren Puppa. time to talk Sabres hockey on WGR Sports Radio 550. Now, Sabres head coach Phil Housley joins Howard Simon and Jeremy White. Phil Housley's appearance on WGR is brought to you by Paul William Belch, your power of attorney, by Falls View Casino Resort, Niagara Falls, Canada, and by AXA Advisors. Take the next step for your financial future today.
Phil Housley coming up in just a moment. Sabres playing Florida tonight, 7 o'clock here on WGR. Pregame begins at 6. We'll get some injury news with Phil in just a moment. The franchise tag period opens today in the NFL. It's going to run through March 5th. Dallas does decline the option of wide receiver Terrence Williams. Marquise Brown, wide receiver Oklahoma, will not work out at the combine or the pro day at Oklahoma. He's got a foot injury.
Liz Frank, the old, that's
a bad injury, right? Isn't that one of those that you don't want to get? Like it could linger for a while or something?
Yeah.
I thought like that was a really bad.
That's not the Sammy Watkins injury, is it?
Didn't he have, his was turf toe or no?
I thought his was the Liz
Frank. Liz Frank? I think that's a bad one to have. Kyler Murray, not sure if he's going to throw at the combine. UB stays 25th in the AP poll. The Bulls play Ohio tonight at home, 7 o'clock. We'll have that on ESPN 1520.
Sammy had a stress fracture. Maybe it was not Liz Frank.
Those are your headlines. Next update coming up at 8 o'clock. On our Wester hotline, we're joined right now by Sabres head coach Phil Housley. Phil, it's Howard and Jeremy. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. Phil, I just want to let you know it was a 65-degree temperature change down here from Fort Lauderdale to Buffalo.
I'm going to guess it went hotter, right? I just wanted to clarify that you're not. It wasn't like minus 30 down there.
No, it's like, We flew in after the Jersey game, and I'm telling you, it was like a big heat wave when we got off the plane because of the humidity. But it's been 80 plus down here.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, Phil. I think we were in single digits this morning when I drove to work. So stay there for a couple days. Is there anything else you can give in terms of information on Kyle Okposo and his returning to Buffalo?
No, we should have an update later today on Kyle from our doctors. So that's where that situation is right now.
But was a concussion ruled out, Phil?
Yeah, it was just an upper body injury. We flew him back to Buffalo to get evaluated by our doctors, and that's the situation right now. But we should have an update on Kyle later today.
Okay, Marco Scandella, has the injury gotten worse or worse than you first anticipated?
Yeah, he stayed in Buffalo and was checked out by our doctors, and he's been upgraded to week to week at this point with his upper body injury.
And then Ristolainen and Bogosian did not practice yesterday. Any update on their chances of playing tonight?
Yeah, it was they took maintenance days, so again there'll be game time decisions tonight where their status is.
And Casey Nelson, does that mean he would be in the lineup tonight?
I can't answer that question. We'll have to wait and see where Zach and Rasmus are later today. But certainly it's great to have Casey back with us after he fulfilled his assignment and had a good practice yesterday, albeit it was a short one, to get our energy ready for tonight.
The season, I mean, in terms of what's going on here, you're well aware of the fact, I'm sure, that the team hasn't been able to put together back-to-back wins in over 2 months now. What's happened? What are the biggest reasons why this team has been unable to put wins together, get on any kind of a streak for a while?
Well, I think it's the situation. We're playing some very meaningful games. We're playing we're in a position where, you look at our game against, after we came off Carolina and we had made an adjustment. We played very good hockey against Detroit. I thought we really played good hockey against Winnipeg. Could have went either way. It's 1-1 late in the third. That game could have given us that second game. And then we come back and beat the Islanders and we're trending in a good direction. And then we get away from what has made us successful. It's almost like we take a deep breath and we got to continue to focus on playing at both ends of the ice. And, you get a game like New Jersey, it's 2-1. It's late in the third. I thought we had a tremendous push in the third period. We couldn't get that second goal. We had a lot of good looks. Larson hits his shoulder. Casey Middlestad's really in a good prime scoring area. And we don't get that goal, but at that point we just got to stay the course and you know, we make a critical mistake at the wrong time. And that's sort of what I see happening is, you know, we're just not staying the course, and we crack a little bit. And when we're down 2-1 and we give that third goal up, you know, then the percentages aren't in your favor. At least we have an opportunity to pull a goalie or try to tie the game up and get it into overtime. So we're just making a critical mistake at the wrong time, and we got to correct that and stay the course and be comfortable in the situation.
Is that more of a mental thing then, the focus issue? Or is it more of a physical thing? And how do you correct it?
Well, I think it's more of a mental thing, and it's just about, you know, recognizing that situation. Like, we're pressing, but it doesn't mean when the puck's coming at us at the other end, it's just we just got to tighten those times up fight for that shift in our end, and then get back, regroup, and get back on the attack. So it's a little bit mental, a little bit doing your job and recognizing the situation.
Wanted to ask you a little bit about one of the things that you talk about from time to time in terms of the offensive zone is guys driving to the net, either traffic in front or at least drive to the net. And it seems like didn't see a lot of that in New Jersey. And it seems like that's been an issue over the course of the season. A, would you agree? And B, do you have guys that just are not willing to do that? How do you get them to drive to the net?
Well, it's a big focus for us. Last couple weeks here, you know, we've been hounded on getting to zone one, and for the most part, our guys are trying to do a good job. And, you know, I think we were, you know, the last couple weeks we're fourth in shot attempts from the slot. We're first overall in the offensive zone time with shot and off that getting shot attempts from the slot. So we are getting there. I think it to me, it's like in New Jersey, game against New Jersey, we're having some really good offensive zone time, but it's the timing of it. We're getting there. And then when the shot comes, we're fading off and trying to play a rebound instead of just having that one guy focus of just fighting for that space over the top and taking the goalie's eyes away. And then from that point, it's just fighting for that loose puck, fighting for that second opportunity. So it's not so much that we're not getting there. We're not getting shots from there. We're not creating shots off our offensive zone time. It's just the critical time when the shot's delivered and just planting our feet and staying over the top of that goalie. And that's an art that there's a lot of good guys in this team, as a team that can do it. But we're trying to find the puck, and we should just – the first guy in the first layer over the goalie should just be concentrating on taking his eyes away. The second layer guy who's squeezing down on that rebound, it should be looking for a rebound. But our guys, you know, it's just a timing issue. I think we are getting there. We're not – when the puck's arriving, we're fading off in the wrong direction instead of staying over to the top of the goalie. So, you know, that's going to be a big focus point tonight. We're going to take a look at some film this morning just to give the guys some visual. But we are creating from the slot in the house. We just got to get that guy to remain over the goalie.
When you say number one in shots from the slot, what was it? Number one in shots from the slot or shots from the slot per zone time? What was it specifically?
It was that just in our last couple of weeks, we were fourth overall of getting shots from the slot off the rush. We were first overall for getting off our offensive zone time when we've had the puck in the zone. We're getting off that offensive zone time. We're getting shots from the slot. So we are getting there, but it's those critical times where we need to get in front of the goalie. As well, if it goes low to high to the point man, and then have that second layer guy, and it's just a focus of just trying to stay right over on top of the goalie.
One of the other things I want to ask you about before I let you go, Phil, is some of the young guys on the team. I mean, Pilot had a rough third period in New Jersey, and he's been up and down of late. Guys like him, Tage Thompson, Casey Mittelstadt. Do you see them getting better? Has their development stagnated at any point with any of those three guys, or are you still seeing progress from some of the younger players?
I see progress. I like where their development is. It's unfortunate that a defenseman who's the last line of defense who makes a mistake, it's very glaring. You know, there's a lot of things that lead up to that play that made that we could have helped on. Casey and Tage, and I like the Tage's game at time where he's attacking the game. He's using his speed. He's getting his shot off. He's a threat off the rush in the offensive zone. I really like where Casey's development is since he's come back. I mean, he had a for his first game back, it took a couple shifts for him to get into it, but I like the way he attacked the game. He's trying to create offense. He's playing well at both ends of the ice. So, you know, these guys definitely can provide a spark for us moving forward, and I like where their development is, but this is important for them playing in these tough games and these big games. That's going to help them with their experience moving forward.
Well, good luck tonight against the Panthers, and enjoy the Florida weather for a few more days, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Phil Housley joining us from South Florida, where the Sabres will play the Panthers tonight. His segment on WGR brought to you by Paul William Belts, your power of attorney, by Falls View Casino Resort, Niagara Falls, Canada, and by AXA Advisors. Take the next step for your financial future today. Quick little tidbit. I just was reading about the Alliance of American Football. We've been talking about it a little bit. It apparently was already in financial difficulties.
Oh.
Quick little story here from The Athletic. David Glenn, the league needed an infusion of cash. Their existence was in jeopardy, and they were in danger of missing payroll last Friday. So the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes is now the new chairman of the AAF because he gave him $250 million to help the league continue its existence. So who knows how long
that
the AAF is going to last.
Yeah,
they were having payroll issues after week number one, so they got an infusion of cash.
With regard to who might come back in the lineup tonight, Casey Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
Casey Nelson has appeared in 22 games this season, is their best defender from a Corsi standpoint. Number one, best defenseman.
Yeah.
I feel like they have missed him. And if he goes in for, I mean, Scandella is their worst of the regulars. Ristolainen is right there. He might miss. And Bogosian is there. Scandella, Ristolainen, and Bogosian are your three lowest. I mean, Hunwick's in that mix too.
Mm-hmm.
He's only played six games.
Right.
And Gouley is actually the worst through two games. Hmm. Again, that's not the end all be all.
Right.
But Casey Nelson missing this much time, I feel like if he had played in the last 30 games, they might have won two in a row.
Somewhere. Sneak out another one.
Yeah,
no, I mean, he's a good solid 5-6 guy. He steadies your other defense pair.
He's a contributor for them.
And that's, I think, look, we've talked about defensive assignments and breakdowns and a whole bunch of issues. Again, not just defensemen. And I think that's a guy who would steady your 5-6 pairing and, you know, makes pretty good decisions. Not going to stand out like a Dahlin, obviously, but a guy who you can rely on to make a sound choice. And they have had some issues with that.
In goals percentage, 5-on-5. Goals on the ice, 4 and against. Nelson's the only defender. I mean, Gouley's actually 1-0, but again, he played two games. Nelson's the only guy above Dahlin.
Wow.
12 goals on, 7 against, and Dahlin is 46-36.
Yeah, so he's a positive addition to steady you a little bit.
It's just goal percentage, whatever you want to look at. There's a million different ways to break it all down. Interesting to hear that they're charting their high danger
slots.
Chances, number one for shots in the slot in the last couple of games. And I don't dispute that. They had a million chances against the Rangers.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, played Detroit, played Winnipeg, played well in that game. So anyway.
We'll get a break in. Winterland Call of the Day coming up. We'll take your calls on the Sabres at 803-0550. Paul Hamilton will join us from Florida at 830 as well on WGR.
This didn't go on for like one short little time skating across the red line. This went on the entire warm-up. You have a veteran defenseman that plays over 20, 21 minutes a night against a guy who's clearly out there to try and throw a person off his game. This Gabriel plays 5 minutes a game if he's lucky. Zach Bogosian is slashing, cross-checking, firing pucks at him. He's a leader on this hockey team. Do you not think that the players that are warming up are watching this? Do you think that this is a distraction? Absolutely ridiculous job by Zach Bogosian. I'll tell you this.
Here's the thing. I don't mind it. If you go out and I'm not saying fight.
Say
I'm not saying
no, no, no.
Forget fighting. I'm not saying
go out to
Gabriel.
Bull crap. I'm going to tell you now with the crap that I just watched on video for 5 minutes watching Zach Bogosian act the way he did. It is disgusting that he did not go and fight this guy.
Craig Revay and Andrew Peters there on the Instigators. I was listening to them on the drive home. I did not see this stuff that happened with Bogosian and Curtis Gabriel.
Yeah.
And went back and had a chance to look at it to see what Craig was talking about.
It's a good point from this standpoint. Look, I think Bogosian, I don't have a problem with Bogosian going after Gabriel one time, but he didn't let it drop. And I think that, based on the clips they showed on the telecast, he went after him three times, maybe four times, a slash, a cross check, an elbow, whatever. He wouldn't let it go away. It's one of, you know, hey, you shot the puck in our zone. Okay, that's one of those stupid codes, and you got to do something about it. So if you want to skate by the guy at the red line one time and give him a little business, okay. But I think you just let it drop and you go on from there. And I think, if I interpret, I was listening too, I think Craig's point is, want to get over it? You want to actually worry about the game? You don't need to keep going after Curtis Gabriel, who's just out there to stir up some you-know-what. So, yeah, I thought it was a really interesting point. I didn't really think about it much when I was watching the game, but I understand his point that, you know, you've got to be focused on the hockey game and not worried about taking a shot at a guy four times, three times in warm-ups. I got a quick whine.
Okay.
Could be a baseball strike this year. Don't need to hear this. Adam Wainwright, St. Louis Cardinals pitcher. The upshot is revenues are at an all-time high and payrolls are dropping. Players aren't happy. So Adam Wainwright from the St. Louis Cardinals says, unless something changes, there's going to be a strike 100%. I'm worried about people are going to walk out mid-season.
Woo! All right, good luck.
Hey, all right, Major League Baseball. Don't worry about that pace of play discussion. You know, if you just walk out altogether, we don't have to worry about 3-hour and 15-minute baseball games. That's great. What a tremendous idea for your sport. So I'm just throwing it out there on the Sports Horizon.
Well, the Major League Baseball Twitter account did something cool over the weekend. They asked for the greatest all-time swing. Who has the greatest swing?
Yeah.
And they had a bunch of clips of Ricky Henderson. And
was it the swing or the stance? It was the actual.
Oh,
like,
you're right. It was the stance. But I mean,
because Griffey Jr. is considered like maybe the sweetest swing in baseball.
But the idea of separating the swing from the stance.
But
like,
I was thinking stance because there could be some really funky stances, like open-ended stances or closed. Or
there were a
Joe
lot.
Morgan used to do the chicken
highlights,
elbow thing.
Every one of those highlights included a swing.
Yeah. So I think you can separate it. Like a swing is.
Well, if they want to separate it, then I want to see the highlight package redone without swings.
Like Craig Counsell isn't
crazy.
He's the guy who had the bat way up in the air.
Yeah.
Like, that's his stance. You wouldn't necessarily say why Craig Counsell had a funny swing. He had a wacky stance because he'd have the bat way up over his head.
You know who else had a crazy weird stance? Was Mickey Tettleton. Remember him?
I do. Catcher.
Yes.
Oakland A's, among others. Maybe the Yankees.
Detroit for a long time.
Okay.
He held the bat parallel to the ground.
Yeah,
very,
you know,
strange. And loose in his hands like he forgot it was there. So I think about Tettleton when I think about weird stances.
Like,
but the best swing, you know, Griffey's one, and I had someone write back to me one that was on the list, was on the highlight reel that I forgot. Gary Sheffield had a great swing. Gary Sheffield attacked the ball. He had the bat waggle. It would, like, as part of his rhythm, it would just kind of bounce the bat and then smash the ball.
That's why I like Willie Stargell, and it was in one of the video clips. He had this big windmill thing. Like, right before he would swing, he would just windmill the bat all around and then, you know, swing and whack at the baseball. I thought that was one of my favorite swings. I like Joe Morgan used to do the old flicking of the elbow. He would take his back elbow when he's in the stance and just, like, do kind of twitch the elbow back and forth into his body and out and kind of go back and forth. I thought that was kind of weird. I'm like, man, how are you doing that stuff before you swing it? But I would go, I love the Stargell windmill. But I thought the stances is, some of the video was about crazy stances. Now, let's face it. The guy with the greatest swing is Vlad Guerrero Jr., or Vlad Guerrero Sr., I should say, because he swung at everything. Any pitch thrown anywhere in the vicinity, I'm not even sure if it had to be in the vicinity of the plate, and he would swing at it with his bat. So, yeah, hey, strike, midseason, great idea. 803-0550 to join us, 888-550-2550. Sabres, 2+ months without back-to-back wins. What have the biggest problems been? We're talking about their season, how it's gone south, getting you ready for the game tonight. If there's anything else you want to get into, we were talking a little bit about football. You know what? You can actually share some results on football. So the rumors persist that the Giants might actually be trading Odell Beckham Jr. And we know what's going on in Pittsburgh with Antonio Brown. How do you want to phrase your Twitter poll with Brown and Beckham?
I asked the question, do you think the Bills would consider trading for Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham Jr., and would you want them to?
So you can chime in on that if you have a football
yes
opinion.
And no, and yes and no to the first and the second part.
803-0550 to join us, or 888-550-2550 this morning on WGR.